shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
World famous Phil Hendry show here every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast, the news talk and entertainment show. That knows what it's talking about, where truth is our bitch and where we go places other talk shows wish they could, but they can't. I will apologize here this evening. I've had nothing having to do with a cold. It's just a strained voice, and I believe I trace it back to Sunday when we were doing Sunday football with Phil, and there were two specific plays that I recall an explosion of screeching and cheering coming out of me. And that can, you know, that can damage the throat in the short term. And I think that's what's happened to me here over the last couple of days. I don't remember it happening on Monday, though, but last night it was very hard to articulate, and tonight it's been very difficult. So, you know, to the extent that it may have been something that you've noticed, I apologize profusely. All right. Tomorrow is going to be kind of interesting. Tomorrow night is a debate in Jacksonville, Florida, and it will be an extremely pivotal debate, so they say, because it happens ahead of the Florida primary. So we're going to watch that and have another roundtable, possibly, with a couple of the guests that we've featured in the past that you have come to know and love so very, very deeply. So that is tomorrow evening, the debate, as it happens before the Florida primary. And I've seen here now the second time, and this may be the second or the third time, that Newt Gingrich has asked individuals to pull down an ad about Mitt Romney.
Yeah, like this one was about immigration or something.
Right, and I don't know whether this ad was produced by the actual people working within his organization or if it was an ad produced by a PAC, a political action committee that is supporting his campaign, because, as you know, as a candidate, you don't control all of the efforts that are at work, perhaps, to, you know, support your campaign. You are the, you know, the principal in your own campaign effort. And you may have, you know, citizens for Newt Gingrich, and you have Californians for Newt Gingrich, and you have, Incan warriors for Newt Gingrich, and you have all of these people that are supporting you. You don't control all of them, you know.
Well, what do you mean you don't control all of them?
Because they're individual organizations that, yes, you would think that if you called them up and you said, "Hi, I'm Newt Gingrich." "Oh, wow, Mr. Gingrich, this is a great honor." "Yes, thank you very much. And you know what? You're doing an ad that I really don't like. Would you please not run it?"
Yeah, but you think that they do what the guy wants then.
You would think that. You would think that. But believe it or not, over the years, you know, there have been instances, and very recent ones, in which a candidate might say, "I really don't like the tenor of that ad. I don't really like what you guys are doing. Would you please not air that?" And they will, "Well, you know, sir, we know better. We know what's better for you than you do." I mean, that's essentially what the answer is.
I tell the people, man, to close it up.
How do you tell them to close it up? You know, some people think they got a better idea of what's good for you than you do. Some people think they got a better idea what's going to win the campaign than you do. They don't want to play ball, and they don't want to be on the... they want to be independent. You know, they want to support you, but they want to support you their way because they know better. And really, I think 9 times out of 10, it winds up hurting people, you know.
But what was the story with this one?
I don't know. I will try and get a little, you know, deeper into it. But I believe it was a PAC it might have been a PAC that had produced an ad about Romney that was rather... caustic, and sort of because of the tenor of the ad, it misses the point, sort of distracts the viewer or the listener from the actual point of what his stand is on immigration. He felt it was caustic, and he asked them to remove it from the air. Now, this is not the first time that Newt Gingrich has had to intercede with individuals that are creating multimedia, you know, television commercials for him that he hasn't, you know, that he's had to say to them, "Would you stop doing what you're doing because it's not really the best thing for our campaign." Now, I heard this today coming out of South Carolina, and the debate the other night, apparently Romney, and that's what some of these pollsters are pointing to, Romney was able to reestablish or was able to recommence some momentum on his behalf. Coming out of the primary and the debate the other night, Romney is now on his way back up a little bit, and Gingrich seems to be evidencing a slip downward. And the thinking is that Gingrich has given it his best shot, kind of like when you're watching football and they'll say to you at the half, they'll say, okay, they gave us the best they got and we're still in the game, so now we know we can go. And I think that's the sense of the Romney people, that Gingrich has pulled out all the stops and Gingrich has fired everything that he's got at the good ship Romney, and the Romney ship is just still, you know, just barreling right through the waves, man. So we'll see what happens, but that's why this debate coming up tomorrow, which we will then recap on the show, is going to be a heavy hitter. What, Robert, what are you doing?
Well, I want to ask something. Well, okay, you froze. Your fly's open.
Can you shut up, my fly's open? You don't have to tell me that now, do you?
I want to know about Romney. What is Gingrich doing to blow him?
Well, Gingrich, the thinking is Gingrich is far more exposed than Romney on the topic of Freddie Mac and monies that might have been taken by Newt Gingrich. He hasn't answered, some people are observing Newt Gingrich saying he hasn't answered that question properly. In the meantime, the thinking is that Romney, the biggest attack that Gingrich has been able to mount against Romney is the health care thing. And the healthcare thing is really not doing the damage that people or people in the Gingrich camp wanted it to. Saying that, you know, Romney has mounted his own version of Obamacare in Massachusetts. It just hasn't done the damage that they wanted it to do. One of the things you have to establish is you have to say,
that's the whole thing. They don't like healthcare.
Well, it is why they don't like it. But one of the things you have to establish is if you say, hey, look at Romney, he did Obamacare in Massachusetts. Yeah, well, was it bad? Well, it didn't do this and didn't do that. In other words, if you bring it up, you can't just bring it up and say, wow, he did Obamacare. You have to point out how it was bad. You got to really be effective. You got to really point out how this, oh, you can call it Obamacare, you can call it Romney Care, call it anything you want. But voters are not so stupid as to say, okay, he did Romney Care. Well, that's bad, isn't it? It may be bad, but tell us how it worked there in Massachusetts. Maybe it worked. Voters are not that ideologic. The independent voters we're talking about, they want to know, yeah, you guys say all this stuff about health care. Did it work or didn't it? Was it a good thing or wasn't it? Did it save people money or didn't it? Did it get people to health care? Let's talk freaking nuts and bolts here, man, and quit with the bull crap. So,
well, they said it worked?
They're not saying it worked, but what Gingrich is not doing is he's not showing how it was this massive failure that he would like you or I or anyone or perhaps himself to believe. Now, that having been said, on the Gingrich side of things, Gingrich has got a problem with Freddie Mac and his connection to that, the possibility that there was some money that changed hands, you know, to his campaign, so on and so forth, lobbying money. And he hasn't really, this is the feeling of the objective observers, he hasn't really answered this question. So we'll find out tomorrow night, because when Romney hammered Gingrich on that question, you know, the feeling is the pollsters feel, the Frank Luntzes, this jackass that they got now on, you know.
Everybody's doing all that posting, man. It's driving me nuts. Yeah, what are they calling that, the CNN tank?
The CNN tank? No, they called it the CNN lab.
Yeah, the lab. Like you're in a laboratory in a little mouse and stuff.
I don't know what that's about, you know. Hey, we're in the CNN lab now. I think it's a Google thing, but we'll find out. Just, you know, again, there's people that crunch these numbers. And I think it's very interesting. I mean, I tell you what, if I had a second career to do, or if I had to do it over again and had another career, I would love to be a person who analyzes the numbers and finds out why people do what they do. Because I think it's really interesting. Some people may think it's boring. I think you can overemphasize it and you can get really crazy with some of the conclusions that you draw. But I really do think it's interesting to watch how people sort of change their mind and vote the way they do. And this thing this thing with the debate this past week and the South Carolina primary, and even though Gingrich won, it's really funny that he is now, he's trending down again. So it's possible the Romney people are saying this. Okay, Gingrich just showed us his best. He just had his best day. He just had the, this is as good as it gets for Newt Gingrich. It's all going downhill from here. This is going to be easy. I don't think they're saying easy, you know.
Yeah, they're going to run him down, though.
Yeah, I mean, not run him down, but I think and this is just my opinion, come convention time, Romney is going to be the man, you know.
Yeah, I mean, they got to do that. If they have anything other than one guy, they ain't going to win.
Well, exactly. They will not win. They will not win. Just like they didn't win in 08 because they had 95 million different guys. And the Democrats, by, you know, pretty much by the convention, had got the whole thing figured out. All right, let's take a break here. The world-famous Phil Hendry Show. We got a couple of things. We have the New Zealand and Mega Upload releasing. New Zealand courts have released one or two of these defendants in Mega Upload. They've released them on bail. We got Demi Moore. What's the story, man? Is she huffing nitrous oxide? Is she in the hospital for exhaustion? Is being in the hospital for exhaustion just another way of saying I'm in the hospital because I'm huffing nitrous oxide? We'll find out. World famous Phil Hendry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show. Phil Hendry Show.
And welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. It is our news and information hour. Bud Dickman and Robert Leonard along with me here. And we'd like you to visit our website, philhendryshow.com. Visit the shop and pick up on some of the groovy stuff that we have in our shop. And we have now a Bobby Dooley item that will be very shortly jumping on into the Phil Hendry Show merchandise shop. If you're watching on Phil TV and HD, you see there was, we've got this download, by the way, the full download of our best of 1994. That is a, that's a wild thing, you know.
That's a long time ago, man.
Yeah, it's 17 years ago. The best of Phil Hendry 1994 is available, the entire CD for download, which means you go right over there, excuse me, God, hit PayPal or your credit card, and bang, it's all yours. Full download. We have, of course, our Teds of Beverly Hills hooded pullover and so many other things. So visit our website, philhendryshow.com. Check out what we got there for you in the shop. Now, here's a tale of derring do. The Navy SEALs parachuted into the darkness, landing more than a mile from their objective, a small bush camp in north-central Somalia, where an American aid worker and a Danish colleague were being held captive.
A Danish?
A Danish.
No, a Danish is what you eat. Yeah, Danish is the...
No, a Danish is what you eat, and a Danish is a guy. Danish. The commandos, several dozen in all, shed their chutes and moved quietly through the bush. The compound had been under secret U.S. surveillance for weeks after an intelligence tip had signaled the whereabouts of the hostages, 32-year-old Ohio native Jessica Buchanan and 60-year-old Powell Thisted. But investigators believed that Buchanan's health was failing and that she might suffer kidney failure. We were told she was not well and left untreated. Her condition could be life-threatening, said a U.S. senior official. About 2 a.m. on Wednesday, the SEALs stormed the kidnappers' compound. In the ensuing firefight, they killed 9 people and rescued the pair without injury. The hostages and SEALs were picked up by helicopters, which flew to an airstrip at the Somali town of Galkayo, 60 miles north of the encampment. There, the hostages were transferred to a U.S. military plane and flown to Djibouti. Pentagon officials defending the decision to kill the hostages. Defending. Can you imagine them having to even defend that? Pentagon officials defending the decision to kill the hostage takers argued that they were armed and that explosives were found at the camp. The SEALs could have taken prisoners, but they were operating under rules of engagement that permitted the use of deadly force if their lives or those of all the hostages were threatened. I am so sick and tired of these rules of engagement that this is an effort by people that You know, it's the next best thing to having an actual argument. It's the next best thing to having an actual point of view. Well, I don't know. You know that we have to go to attack. Yes, I do. But, you know, I've always been very anti all of that. So I'm going to have to, insert into this some of my rules. Okay, what are your rules? I want some rules of engagement. Okay, one more thing for them to think about so we can get some guys killed. Is that it? How dare you say that? I've been a supporter of the military. Well, I was in the military. Uh-huh. That's what happens. That's what happens. It's a political divide. There is a, you know, just like everything else in this country, there is a pro-military and there, well, everybody says they're pro-military, but we have a part of the political equation of this country that's suspicious of the military. Let's put it that way. And they must have a very, very onerous civilian override somewhere. So, rules of engagement. And just as we were discussing with the snipers peeing all over those guys, even that case, I don't think there were too many, even people who consider themselves, you know, ultra-liberal and anti-U.S. involvement in Iraq. And, you know, they just kept their mouths shut. Because we got to a point now where the second-guessing our soldiers that are out in the field is asinine. So, rules of engagement, I understand that. You're going into a camp. It's at night. At night. And you're there to rescue two human beings. Your job is not to take hostages. To take prisoners. You're not going to sit there and hold your fire. Beyond the edge of the camp is what? Darkness. Pitch black. You're able to light up a certain area enough to see what you're doing. Getting these people, see who it is that you have to contend with, and get the hell out of there. And you're going to ask these guys to start to equate in their minds just what's the shot at taking prisoners. I can't believe that there are reporters that still ask these questions. And the reason why I'm acting the way I'm acting and talking the way I'm talking is right after the whole Bin Laden thing went down, I mean, did you ever in your life hear such stupidity? You got a whole country celebrating the fact that this man has been justifiably dropped in the ocean, dead. And we couldn't even enjoy that moment for 5 minutes. No. You can't have that fun. Nuh-uh. You can't be happy, not even a couple of minutes, America. You got to have Michael Moore weighing in on what a terrible thing it was, and some other douchebag talking about how we didn't take a prisoner, and some other guy this, and some other guy that. You got Gaddafi, his own people pulled him out of a car and did whatever they did to him. They killed him, knifed him, shot him, whatever they did. And now we got people arguing this is a war crime of some kind. This guy was an enemy combatant. That's what Gaddafi was. Sure, he was captured and he was summarily executed. It happens. You know, in the rules of war or the rules of some of the world's military, if not all, I think it's an international law. If you're caught and you're a military person, you're a soldier, and you're caught wearing the uniform of someone other than who you claim to be, you can be shot out of hand as a spy. If you're an officer, but you are caught wearing a enlisted man's uniform, or if you are an officer and you're caught wearing civilian clothing, spying, you can be shot. So if you get Gaddafi hiding out in a truck someplace, dressed like a sheep herder or whatever the hell it was that he was dressed like, and they capture this guy, well,
yeah, he's the guy. You mean they didn't recognize him?
Well, what's he hiding for, man? He knows that he's a wanted man. He knows he's wanted. He knows that he is. What is he hiding for? Why is he running? I mean, in other words, why is he trying to conceal or secrete himself in places so that no one will find him or pass as somebody who he isn't? This guy deserved to get shot. So, but they wanted to make a big issue out of that. And so it goes here with this fantastic rescue by the Navy SEALs of these two aid workers in Somalia. Now, the dramatic rescue by the SEALs from the same special operations unit that brought you Osama bin Laden in Pakistan in May reflects how much has changed about U.S. capabilities in Somalia. In 1993, the U.S. military retreated from a failed peacekeeping mission after losing 18 Americans and two Black Hawk helicopters in a fierce battle in Mogadishu. Only after the September 11, 2001 terrorist attack did the Pentagon return to Somalia and other countries and begin deploying surveillance drone aircraft and other special operations units. We'll continue talking about this because it's very important. And this is the Phil Hendry Show.
I'm Bud. I'm Robert.
We'll be right back.
Phil Hendry. You're listening to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Says here, welcome back to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. We're talking about the Somali raid by the U.S. SEALs that rescued the two aid workers, Jessica Buchanan and Paul Thisted. This gentleman is from Denmark, and she is an American aid worker, and he was a colleague. They were being held captive by Somali criminals, and that's who the U.S. investigators who were investigating this, while they were being held hostage, they found out these guys are nothing more than these kinds of slobs that are looking to make money. All right, so you know it's a world of warlords and criminals and you know bandits and people who are running they're without any constraint of law, and these guys are just some dudes looking to make some cash. So they figured this out. At least that was their read. They were not militants. They weren't pirates. At first, there were promising signs the hostage ordeal might be short. Local clan leaders denounced the abduction, and supporters organized demonstrations demanding their freedom. FBI agents investigating the kidnapping of U.S. citizens were cautiously optimistic. A team of hostage negotiators based out of the FBI's New York field office advised Buchanan's family and officials from the Danish Refugee Council, who had made contact with the kidnappers via sympathetic Somali clan leaders. But the negotiations came to naught. Then in mid-January, the FBI received intelligence the aid workers were under guard near the village of Himogabo, 60 miles south of Galkayo. Thisted, who had studied anthropology and education in Denmark, had worked in East Africa for more than a decade and had managed explosive safety programs in Somalia for the nonprofit group since 2009. Ms. Buchanan grew up in Cincinnati. She first came to Africa in 2007 as a student teacher for the Roslyn Academy, a private Christian elementary and high school in Nairobi. She decided to stay for 2 years. Buchanan left the relative safety of Nairobi and began working on landmine programs in Somalia. So what happens is the United States says, okay, let's go get them. And they have some silly-ass discussion with somebody about do you take prisoners or not? And of course, the military, the cooler minds prevail. We're here to save these people and not get soldiers killed. So, yeah, sure, we'll take prisoners, not. And that's what happened. Now, the whole point of this article it's got nothing to do with the fact that the hostages were taken. And what they're saying is, and I think it's fascinating. It's something we talked about with Captain Dive before the Iraqi war started. This is the new model. This is the American military model. And more we are seeing an American military that can go anywhere it wants in the world and get anything done. I remember when the Entebbe, you guys know that?
Uh-uh.
You guys never heard of Entebbe?
Well, I know that was Israel.
It was Israel. And Israel went in to Entebbe Airport in Uganda. At that time, it was run by a real nutcase named Idi Amin. This guy was real nuts. He walked around wearing all kinds of goofy-ass-looking hats, and he thought he was the king of the world, and he was just something else, man. And what happened was is these German leftists took this Air France plane, and they hijacked it. They took it to Uganda, and they held these people hostage, and they were doing outrageous things. They separated the Jewish passengers from the rest of the passengers. The French captain protested. He did the best that he could to try to protect his passengers. He said, "This is outrageous. Why are you segregating the Jewish?" And of course, it's 1975. Some of those people that were being segregated remembered. They were still young enough to remember World War II. And some of them, when they were being segregated, literally moved into another room. They said, we've seen this before. We're going to be killed. You know, we're Jews. And, you know, some things never change, man. You know, they're Germans. We're Jews. They're going to kill us. Even though they're German leftists. Meanwhile, Israel has decided, well, you know, we got to do something here, man. We're not going to sit around with our thumb up our rear ends. So they come up with a plan to go down there and get them. And when they did, and I won't go through the whole thing, but when they did, it was an international sensation. We hadn't seen anything like this since World War II. It was amazing, you know. And you looked at Israel, and everybody was talking about how Israel, well, look at the guts they got, and why don't we, I mean, it was something that was so far afield of America's experience at that time. Anything that America, because America was enthralled, and not enthralled, America was locked in this public relations problem. Vietnam sucked. Watergate sucked. We're a big bunch of jackasses. We're a big industrial military complex. That's why I laugh when I hear people using all of these terms from the 60s. I've heard it all before. We've all heard it all before. America the big Satan. America this, America that. Dow Chemical Company. Napalm. Yeah. So we were afraid, paralyzed, to do anything. And then here's Israel saying, well, you know what? We're not. Because we know how this ball game's played, and we know what's at stake, and we know that nobody's got our back on anything. We're a bunch of Jews, so we got it all figured out. You think we think anybody's our friend? Forget it. We're going to go down, and we're going to do what we got to do, and we won't take any prisoners. And they didn't. They killed every son of a bitch that they saw that wasn't one of the hostages. When they came into that main terminal area, they shouted in Israeli, "Everybody down." We're Israeli soldiers, figuring that people would understand. I think they shouted it in English.
No, sir, what about the people who don't speak Israeli?
I was thinking for some reason they were just there where the Jewish passengers were, but I think they just said everybody down, we're soldiers. And I think one of the passengers did not respond or got up and tried to run. And they shot everybody that was left standing. Anybody that was standing, they shot. And the fact is, everybody that was standing was a terrorist. They all had guns, and they were all training them on the Israelis, and the Israelis, wasted all of them. And I think one of the Israeli soldiers was killed from a sniper who was up in the air control tower at the airport. And I think he was Netanyahu's brother, as a matter of fact.
Who's that?
Netanyahu is the prime minister of Israel right now, Benjamin Netanyahu. I believe, you know what? I don't know. I'm going to have to look this up. I don't think it was his brother was killed, but I do believe one of the Netanyahus was involved in the raid. So anyway, the reason why I'm saying all this stuff is that was an example of what could be done. And it was rather improvised. It was just done on the fly. The Israelis were, okay, let's see. We got to fly down to Uganda. We're going to be flying over territory that we shouldn't be flying over. There's hostile countries. We're talking about Libya. They hate our guts. We're talking about, you know, crossing over a territory that people don't want us to cross over. We need to refuel in the air. We need to have a hospital aircraft in case we've got wounded. We need to have a communications aircraft. We need to have other things like a Mercedes-Benz.
What do you need that for?
They had a Mercedes-Benz outfitted to look like Idi Amin's Mercedes-Benz, which had the little flags on the front and the whole nine yards. This is all intelligence, and this all comes from years and years of Israel gathering this intelligence. They put an Israeli soldier in the back seat wearing a black ski mask. He had on an Idi Amin uniform. Okay.
But they put the black ski mask so he looked like a black guy. Is that why they did it?
Yeah, that's exactly why they did it. And I think the driver blackened his face. They rolled this Mercedes-Benz out of the back of that cargo plane that landed. They rolled it down the runway toward the terminal. What they wanted it to look like was that Idi Amin was making a surprise visit to the airport, which he did a lot. So it wouldn't be unusual for those soldiers to see Idi Amin's Mercedes pull up. And so his Mercedes comes rolling up. And these guys give the salute, and the Israelis jump out and cut them down. And that is sort of the advance guard that is able to sort of neutralize everything that's around the terminal, and they begin to fire at any of the sentries that they had in the control tower. They fired at the terminal, which backed the terrorists inside. Israelis had come up from behind them, so they now had a full force. They went into the terminal, and that's when they told everybody to get down. They started shooting at anybody that was standing up. And one lady had been taken to the hospital. She had been ill, and she was taken to a hospital. She was an elderly British citizen. They never saw her again.
What'd they do with her?
They probably killed her.
Who did?
The Ugandans.
You mean they took her to the hospital? Why?
She was an elderly a passenger who got sick, and so the Ugandans took her into the city to a hospital, and she was in the hospital while this Entebbe raid took place.
Oh, so they never got her out.
They never got her out. And they kept asking, where is she? And the Ugandans, the Ugandans killed her. You know, so I think the Ugandans said she died in the hospital. Yeah, sure. But anyway, when we saw this and the rest of the world saw this, look at what they did. And so this began, you know, sort of the wheels turning. But it wasn't until this disastrous attempt to rescue the hostages in Iran in 1980 that we started in earnest the development of our special forces. And now these small units go anywhere in the world, whether it's SEALs, the Delta Force, or whoever. They can go anywhere and attack in a small unit and take care of situations like hostages or, whatever. I mean, rescuing people, giving aid, killing somebody that needs to be killed. And this is the wave of the future. And the U.S. military now is probably the best and strongest and most respected in the world. And if you think about it, it's operating at a level where they're using less manpower to get things done. We didn't use as many troops in the Iraq War or the Afghanistan War as we did in the Gulf War. So, just stuff to think about.
Man, that's pretty interesting, but they had a movie called Raid on Entebbe, because I just looked at it here, IMDb.
Yeah.
Yeah, they did. They made a couple of them.
Yeah. And the guy there, Charles Bronson.
Yeah, that guy's pretty badass.
Charles Bronson was in one, and Richard Dreyfuss was in another one. We'll look at that when we take the break. We'll be right back. World-famous Phil Hendry Show here. New Zealand court bails two associates of the Mega Upload founder. We'll find out about that and what happened to Demi Moore when we come back here on The Phil Hendry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
Killed.
Welcome back, world famous Phil Hendry Show. Who?
Yanni Netanyahu, and he was a commander of the Israeli Army Commandos.
Yeah, he got killed on the day they went in there.
So Netanyahu's older brother.
Yeah, Yanni Netanyahu, the older brother of the Prime Minister of Israel.
He was killed, and you know when the raid took place was July the 4th, 1976, the 200th anniversary of the United States, at least the 200th anniversary of the Declaration of Independence, which is, you know, kind of ironic or kind of weird. Anyway, so he was killed during Operation Entebbe. Why I thought only one soldier was killed. One of the guys that was killed was General Shamron, and this man, Yanni Netanyahu, he was a member of this Sayeret Matkal. You know, we interviewed that kid. His name was Adam Cohen, I think. He grew up in Los Angeles in Beverly Hills, had a kind of a Hollywood family. He gave it all up to go to Israel and join the Israeli army and was a part of this unit. And it was an assassination unit that went into Palestine. It's like well beyond my, you know.
What's that got to do with anything?
I don't know. It was just like I think I recognized the name of that unit that this guy was in, and I think it was the same one. All right. New Zealand court bails two associates of Mega Upload founder. Well, a New Zealand court granted bail on Thursday to two associates of the founder of online file-sharing website Mega Upload, accused of being involved in a scheme that allegedly made more than $175 million from internet piracy and illegal file-sharing. Dutchman Braun van der Kolk, age 29, and Finn Batato, a 38-year-old German, who were Finn Batato?
Sounds like a soup.
It does. It sounds like, like a fin of potato. Anyway, 38-year-old German who were arrested last Friday along with Mega Uploads founder Kim.com were freed on bail. A decision on another accused, Matthias Ortmann, was put off until Friday pending further submissions on his bail application. The judge said, Judge David McNaughton, I'm satisfied that the risk of flight here is minimal and such risk as remains can be met by the imposition of strict bail conditions, including electronic monitoring. A lawyer for the men who had argued their role in the company was different from that of .com. They did not have secret sources of funds or multiple identities. Yeah, this guy, I can't believe that, .com can't figure out why they're not granting him bail. Multiple identities.
Well, he had a lot of credit cards.
The guy had, I don't know how many credit cards he had. He had four passports. All right, so the United States wants to extradite all four on charges of internet piracy, copyright infringement, racketeering, and money laundering. .com, age 38, was refused bail on Wednesday because the judge believed there was a significant risk that he could try to flee from New Zealand. He will reappear in court on February 22nd. His lawyer is preparing to appeal that decision, maintaining that .com does not have the means to leave the country. The defendants have said they're innocent of the piracy and other charges, asserting the company simply offered online storage. Well, they don't get it, man. And they will use all kinds of bullcrap reasoning and stupid excuses that they know full well ain't going to get it done. If you're offering online storage, well, then those files that are being stored, and that's all you're offering, then those files that are being stored are nothing that people can access and download unless they're the owners themselves of those files. But that's not the case. The case was that they were offering online storage and, oh yeah, here's this and here's this and here's this and here's this and just enter your password and sign in and you can download it. Good luck to those lawyers. I mean, good luck. So anyway, an extradition application must be lodged within 45 days of an arrest. The U.S. must show the alleged offenses would be crimes in New Zealand, punishable by at least 12 months in jail. Legal experts have said the extradition process is likely to be long and complex. They don't want to come to the United States. They don't want to come here and be on trial for this kind of thing because, you know, there's all of the people that the aggrieved parties, if you will, the people who have been pissed off and have been throwing the money into attorneys to try to get this stuff rectified and have been unsuccessful because these guys just simply take these takedown notices and they wipe their rear ends with them or they put them up and make fun of them. There are a lot of pissed off people. So you come back to the United States and all these guys have got, they've lawyered up. And we're just talking, just like in every other situation nowadays, folks, we're not just talking about the criminal offense. Now we talk about a civil action. Somehow, some way, they're going to get their pound of flesh out of Fat Boy here. And you know what? He's got plenty to spare. So
yeah, pound of flesh. Yeah, he's about 6'6".
Yeah, they'll get like a couple of pounds of flesh out of that guy. Feeling the heat from Gingrich, Romney enters attack mode. He drinks milk, not beer. His vocabulary includes gee and darn. But Mitt Romney's being forced by increasingly tenuous political circumstances to show his mean guy. Needing to convince Republican voters before the Florida primary on Tuesday that Newt Gingrich is an unacceptable option as the party's presidential nominee, Mr. Romney is increasingly carrying out the attack himself. It's hardly his first foray into the dark side, but it's his most intense of the political career that he's had, and a particular challenge for a candidate whose demeanor has been defined largely by caution and can-do. This guy never wanted to get down in the dirt. I don't want to read this because we already talked about him.
Yeah, it's interesting.
I already did 15 minutes on this nut. But I'll tell you this about Romney. This guy, that's why this cat didn't, he didn't cut it in 08 because Huckabee and McCain went after him and they just cut him down. And he wouldn't go there, you know.
Well, they were ripping into him. They want to get McCain.
Right. I mean, Huckabee wanted McCain. Huckabee knew he was dead. He wasn't going anyplace. And McCain was the guy, and Romney's too soft, too liberal, too whatever the hell. And they ripped into him. They cut him a new ass. And guess what, man? He let him. Now comes a point where you got to just get nasty, and that's what they're saying. So I don't want to talk any more about that thing, man. We talked like a whole bunch of stuff. So that's where that's at, you know.
There going to be football?
No, there's no football this weekend. It's a two-week interim between the conference championship and the Super Bowl. But when there is football, we'll have it on Phil TV and HD. We will have our Sunday football with Phil. It'll be the Super Bowl game, and it'll be really fun, and it'll be really neat.
Yeah, people want to know when you're going to start drinking.
When I'm going to start drinking?
Yeah, they want you to drink on a Sunday football.
I don't know, man. You know, what do you mean when am I going to start drinking? You mean start doing tequila shots and stuff?
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm in the mood. Tell you what, if I make any real money between now and the Super Bowl, I'll go ahead and cut loose, all right? If I get any good news between now and the Super Bowl, anything, something, we'll go ahead and do tequila shots. The world-famous Phil Hendry Show is produced by Dan Northcraft, as well as Phil Hendry. And, of course, we invite you to join us online at philhendryshow.com. That's philhendryshow.com. That's where we are. That is our online headquarters, and that's where you can go to pick up all kinds of downloads, archives, our daily podcasts, our video archives, as well as our 13 years of Groovy-ass archive.
Phil Hendry.
See you tonight, folks.